One of the things I realize is that I write, when I sit down and decide what we're going to do for these reflections or our services, I write a little piece and I try to think it through. So it's good before we go into talking and you kind of wonder where this is going to share with you that. It's on the back of your bulletin, but it says, Earthy Hope. The problems all around us seem so big, and our individual contribution seems so small. It's difficult to find and hang on to the realistic hopes we need to live positively and well, to feel good about the commitments we make, and to notice and value the joy we experience. Each of us carries our own version of a similar yearning. Each of us is seeking new revelations for life and love. We're hoping that this time helps give us hope, keep us engaged in the conversation and on the path. After I wrote that, I went and talked to Jan Parton to say, it's the Sunday before Earth Day. Would you like to do anything in the service? And she read this and wrote a really fine piece on her hopes and how she structures it. And so Jan is going to share that, and then I will respond afterwards. She's going to share some of the big concerns and how you find hope in that, and then I'll kind of move in to a little smaller, more personal understanding of hope.
It's just water. When Jim asked me to talk about hope and the environment, I thought, oh no, what can I say? Well, it's really difficult to be very hopeful when the newspapers are full of stories about the growing number of extreme weather events, monster twisters and storms, record-breaking droughts, fires, mudslides, unprecedented flooding, severe icy winters, melting glaciers, rising sea levels, and 13 of the 14 hottest years ever recorded have occurred in the 21st century. A clear majority of Americans now acknowledge that man-made pollution is responsible. But, you know, this in itself is hopeful. It means that we can change the course of events. If we created this crisis, why can't we correct it? Indeed, we have a moral obligation to try. I think communities of faith are in a unique position to take the lead. Some suggest that religion may be the only institutions still able to respond to this challenge. Scientists fear that we have reached the long-feared tipping point, and as a result, no matter what we do, we're going to experience the devastating effects of climate change. In fact, I think we already are. Well, it is true. We have waited too long to avoid some serious damage to the planetary ecosystem. Yet the truly catastrophic damages that have the potential for ending civilization as we know it can still, almost certainly, be avoided. So clearly, we will just have to gird ourselves for the difficult challenges ahead. There is literally a light at the end of the tunnel, but there is a tunnel, and we are well into it. Recall Winston Churchill's inspiring words, "If you're going through hell, keep going." And that's why it's all the more important to fully appreciate the incredible opportunity for salvation that is now within our grasp. The pace of the changes already set in motion can still be moderated significantly, according to a cadre of scientists. The good news: our ability to convert sunshine into usable energy has become much cheaper, far more rapidly than anyone ever predicted. And by 2020, costs will continue to decline. More than 80% of the world's people will live in regions with electricity from sources other than carbon-based fuel. And Germany, Europe's industrial powerhouse, where renewable subsidies have been especially high, now generates about 37% of its daily electricity from wind and solar, 37%. In the United States, 49% of the new generating capacity came from renewable energy in 2012, and 166 coal-fired electricity generating plants have either been closed or are announcing that they are being closed. And we are beginning to witness a massive shift in a new energy distribution model from the central station shift, which is a utility grid model that goes back to the 1880s, to a widely distributed model with rooftop solar cells, on-site and grid battery storage, and microgrids. You know, it's worth remembering that enough raw energy reaches the Earth from the sun in 1 hour to equal all of the energy used by the entire world in a full year. We must be taking advantage of that. Well, and the cost of wind energy is also plummeting, having dropped 43% in the U.S. since 2009, making it now cheaper than coal for a new generating capacity. The United States and China are taking a lead in combating global warming, which is no small thing considering they account for two-fifths of the world emissions. President Obama has made emissions reduction a top priority for his second term. Unable to get climate laws through the legislature, he is indeed resorting to executive orders to cut carbon dioxide emissions from vehicles and power stations. And this should enable the United States to meet the target of a 17% reduction in carbon emissions by 2020. And 61 of 66 countries worldwide that are responsible for 88% of the world emissions have passed legislation to control emissions. Renewable energy is taking off. Its worldwide capacity is already 10 times larger than what was predicted at the turn of the millennium. And opposition to action is beginning to fade. One survey that focused on the division of political parties shows that even most U.S. Republicans under the age of 35 regard skeptics as ignorant, out of touch, or crazy. There is also exciting news in the automobile industry. How many of you have heard of Elon Musk and his electric plug-in car, the Tesla? Right now, the Tesla gets somewhere between 89 to 100 miles per gallon. And the price has come down drastically as more people are discovering this remarkable car. And Musk right now is in the process of building the largest lithium-ion battery plant of its kind in the world in the Nevada high desert in Reno. While the burning of fossil fuel is the largest cause of climate crisis, deforestation and factory farming also play an important role. Financial and technical approaches to addressing these challenges are starting to emerge, but we must continue to make progress in converting to sustainable forestry and agriculture. We all know the reforms that are needed, yet they can only come from an awakened citizenry empowered by a sense of urgency and emboldened with the courage to reject despair and become active. There is a genuine and a realistic hope that we are finally putting ourselves on a path to solve the climate crisis. How long will it take? When Martin Luther King Jr. was asked that question, during some of the bleakest hours of the U.S. civil rights movement, he responded, "How long? Not long, because no lie can live forever. How long? Not long, because the arc of the moral universe is long, and it bends toward justice." And so it is today. How long? Not long.
As you hear, Jan's message is encouraging. There are things happening. Things are changing. I'm going to pull up a stool because it's so big, I just want to sit in front of you and kind of give it a different, a little bit different feel. Things are changing. How can we be, we want to be, as she says so well, an awakened citizenry empowered by a sense of urgency and emboldened with the courage to reject despair and become active. Emboldened with the courage to live beyond despair. Jan's message is encouraging. How do we practice, embody, and live encouraged? The facts are big and frightening, and in large measure beyond us and the scale of our lives and our competence. It's easy to be discouraged, to discourage, or feel that what we do and how we behave doesn't matter, so let's just do that or behave that way. When we do that, we disconnect ourselves and our lives from an overarching love and care that we are a part of. We participate then in despair. Courage comes from the word for heart. Encouraged is to have heart. Discouraged is to lose heart. Despair is to be without hope, to whatever degree, even as a nagging sense. Lose hope, lose heart. That's no way to live. June Jordan actually calls it a form of suicide because we are losing life little by little, even in our own experience. Heart is the home of caring, not the center of fear. It fills now with toughness born of love. It is the source of urgency, strength, and determination, not fear and righteousness. To live with heart is to live encouraged, to practice love and joy and right living in the face of that which would have you live otherwise. Our April theme is revelation. What does it mean to be a people of revelation? We've said that revelation is, as Sharon Parks calls it, that new image or insight that enables us to see the whole of life in ways that personally eluded us. So as we think about climate change, for example, we quickly find ourselves thinking and hoping for revelations as we work for change and toward the future that has yet to be revealed. There's that big picture. We think we do what we can in the hopes that what we do will make a difference, all come together and make a difference. We know from examples of human history what a difference vision and perseverance can make. As Margaret Mead says, indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. We hope for revelations in hopes that the visions of what is a good life and a good world somehow shift in as yet unforeseen ways to sustainable understandings. We hope for revelations in the form of technological breakthroughs that make the difference in our existing way of life so that we can live like we want to, not the hair shirt, you know, so we can live like we want to and still have a global climate that hasn't shifted too much. We're hoping for revelations and change. Each one is a particular understanding of hope. It's a hope that the future will be different. As such, it's future-oriented, and it's all out there. It's all this vision of what we want to be different. It is beyond us, and it's easy for it not to be in here, not for us to be in our heart, so that we give it heart, encouraged. I've experienced and lived into a revelation that moves closer to home. It moves into hope and courage. I've talked about it before. It's actually why I went to divinity school. Is that working as a conservation biologist for years, I lost hope. I didn't see how we were going to make a difference. I didn't see where all the work that I was doing was going to end up in a positive way. That's why I said, I've got to look at it in a different way. I understand hope in an additional way, not in opposition to our hopes that, but in addition to, in a way that fills in the present so our hope is not just always out there in the future. It's a way that gives me heart, builds courage, helps us be strong in ways that each and every one of us can be and are strong every day, where we can live, as Wendell Berry describes, at the scale of our competence. And I would add, at the scale of our commitment, and then feel good about it. Moving into hope and courage, closer to home. There is a hope known as fundamental hope. It's called a hope in, rather than a hope that. Gabrielle Marcel said, I hope in thee for us. There is joy and love to be lived and practiced in the present, no matter the future. Let me say that again. There is joy and love to be lived and practiced in the present, no matter the future. It is for us to be sure that it isn't pulled away. It is trying to surface, given half a chance. Right living requires it. It doesn't just require doing for the future hope that. It requires living in the present. In a medical model that so many of us understand, think this. There is healing to be found and lived, even if it turns out or we find out there is no cure. Life and love in the present. It is fundamental hope of the earth and in the heart. It fills from here to there, step by step, in love and with courage to felt right living. So our actions are lived out because we care. Not so much because we're scared, and that's all I had. But now I know how to fill it in by what I do each day and how I interact with you. Practice how we go about our daily lives. We practice coming back to love and joy without discounting it for what it isn't. Oh, this is just a little thing, you know? It's not big and dramatic. Coming back to love and joy without discounting it for what we think it isn't. We actually practice encouraging life, bringing heart back to life. We give and reclaim time. What else do we have? What else do we have? With practice, you find that you will make choices for what you love, not just to avoid the idea that you fear. Earthy hope, encouraged life. Because of our theme this month, it's revelation, I leave you with one I've had and I suggest another practice. It's one that came to me this month, the scale of our competence and daily life. From the introduction to our study packet on what does it mean to be a people of revelation, James Luther Adams, the eminent UU, preeminent Unitarian Universalist theologian, said, "We cannot properly place our confidence in our own creations. We must depend upon a transforming reality that breaks through our encrusted forms of life and thought to create new forms. We put our faith in a creative reality." Life is creative, right? In a creative reality that is recreative, recreation. Revelation is continuous. They talk about in the introduction that requires humility. Humility to admit that we can't see or break out of those stuck ways of being all on our own. Humility to trust that there is an otherness, a confounding, mysterious, maybe conscious, maybe not conscious otherness operating out there and in us that we need. And it says, and so do you trust it? Do you trust that life itself is trying to tell you something important, trying to break through, lead you somewhere? Can you see or do something important? So how do you do that? We make time. Well, we can't do that. You can't make time, but we say it all the time. But we can choose how to spend it. What an awful thing to say, spend it. It's really, we can choose how we live into it. What is to be revealed? Imagination, God, life, energy, whatever you say, creation, bringing forth something to be revealed. Don't get hooked on where it comes from. Don't get hooked on all that. Just move into space where new understandings of life and love, courage and heart come into being. What if we made space to listen, be in conversation with, not in control? How many people say, I don't have time to do that? I don't have time to sit quietly. You'll say, I don't have 5 minutes to meditate. I don't have 5 minutes for quiet reflection. I don't have the time. What else do you have? This last, I guess it's 2 weeks ago, in our Spirituality on Tap group where we're reflecting on revelations and all kinds of things, somebody shared that they have a prayer life. Every day they have an appointment. And maybe that's what we all need, is something where we can make the appointment, because we know how to keep appointments with anybody. Make an appointment and I'm there. An appointment. But it's space to hear imagination, God, life breakthrough, insight, the you that's beneath the shoulds and oughts and expectations. What's another name for shoulds and oughts and expectations? The fears that you're not going to meet them. But then there's the you that's there, that's living out life. The fundamental you. That is the fundamental hope. This person said that they just spend 5 minutes in the morning before they head out in their day talking to God. It wasn't an issue in our group about whether there was God or not, or how or who was going to respond, but it was the conversation of putting it out there into the universe and then listening back to see what came through the imagination and the way of being. The fundamental you, that is the fundamental hope. And it's grounded in the love and joy in the heart of our life opportunity that we each embody. How to live encouraged. So now go, live well and joyfully, and do no less than save the earth.